Well, welcome, 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 everybody. And they are psyched today because we have a great guest on our show today. Let me introduce our ghost. All right, calm down. Calm down. Everybody sit down. Put your mask back on.
Our guest today is Jeremy Watkin. He's Director of Customer Experience and Support at NumberBarn and co-founder of the Customer Service Life blog. He has more than 20 years of experience as a customer service and contact center professional leading high-performance teams. Jeremy has been recognized numerous times as a thought leader for his writing and speaking on a variety of topics, including quality management, outsourcing customer experience, contact-center technology, and a whole lot of other stuff. When he's not working, you can typically find him spending quality time with his wife, Alicia, and their three boys, running with his dog, or out fishing and hunting.
Yeah, hi, Nancy. It's great to be here.
Yeah, so... Trout fishing, huh? Is that with a fly rod?
Yeah, and probably not as much as I would like. I, for a time, lived in Oregon where it was like, I could be on a river in 5 minutes. And that's a little, it's a little trickier in Southern California. I need to get better at fishing in the ocean.
Deep sea fishing, yeah. Need to switch it up a little bit.
Yeah, there is surf fly fishing, but I haven't I've done it just a little bit, but haven't had any success yet. I need to probably hire somebody who knows more than me.
Well, there's something you do know a lot about that we're going to talk about today, and that's classifying your QA scorecards, because there's a lot of talk out there, especially since COVID, you know, has pushed everybody remote. You know, should we spend more time with customers? So is handle time important anymore? The quality of the call, you know, first call resolution and all those things. And I think in a previous conversation, you and I talked about that, and you had a very kind of interesting perspective on that. So maybe you could share with our listeners out there, you know, what your thoughts are around how organizations should go about maybe reassessing what's on those scorecards.
Yeah, the funny thing is, so I just started it. I guess I've been at NumberBarn about 9 months. And prior to that, as you mentioned, I was working at a BPO, really overseeing a lot of their quality efforts. But when I was interviewing for this role at NumberBarn, one of the things our leaders mentioned was, you know, I think in general they felt like the team was doing a good job, but they felt like the team might be missing on certain things and interacting with customers. Our part of our mission is to make meaningful connections with our customers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, and as I came in, I was like, well, if you want to achieve certain goals on a, you know, whatever the customer service channel is, whether it's a phone call, email, social media post, anything, quality assurance is your key.
Right.
And, you know, I think a lot of us contact center people think of quality assurance as just filling out this form, you know, creating a form, creating sort of a scorecard and grading our agents. But to your point, Nancy, what if the scorecard we're using to grade is flawed and it's not helping us achieve the goals that we actually want to achieve? So I often talk to and have worked with teams to help them back up a few steps. And first of all, just kind of dream about the type of customer experience, the type of customer interaction you want your agents to deliver. And, you know, that might, for me, I think, you know, I've seen scorecards with 30 or more items, and that might be a little too granular, but,
wow. Okay.
But yeah, you know, can you list maybe, you know, between 5 and 10 behaviors that if an agent does that every time on a call or on an email, that it's generally going to be a good interaction,
right?
Or a really good interaction in a lot of cases.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because kind of to that point, I was listening to a workforce performance seminar or something like that, and one of the folks talking was from a hospital, And, you know, they were really trying, they were under this pressure of, gosh, I've got to, you know, handle this call according to this checklist, you know, if somebody's listening to this call, but it's obvious this customer has an issue. And with hospitals, you know, it's not like they can go somewhere else and buy the product in a lot of instances, right? So they're kind of stuck with that.
Yeah.
This is what my insurance carrier allows me to. And the hospital's kind of like, well, you know, there's the way we're going to handle our call, and, you know, that's too bad, you know. But it's like she was frustrated because it's like, I'm not helping the customer. I'm doing what the checklist says, but I'm not helping the customer, and they don't have another option when it comes to their care.
Yeah, and it's really interesting when you get into some of those behaviors that that maybe there's a conflict between what a customer-centric behavior and something that's probably trying to, you know, protect the company's bottom line. And I've heard some,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if I want to say horror stories, but certainly different than how I was raised in customer service, where, you know, maybe a BPO was their client would refuse to pay for a certain call if it exceeded a certain length or something like that. And,
mm-hmm.
That's, you know, great for the company's bottom line, maybe, but not great for the both the agent and the customer experience.
Right.
Because, you know, agents want to solve problems. They don't want to. I think we get a little short-sighted and think, okay, we kept the handle time to 5 minutes, but what about that customer that then had to call in three more times before they got their issue resolved because they were rushed off the phone.
And right.
I don't know if you see this, Nancy, but I feel like with all of this, one of the great things about all this talk about customer experience, and it's such a buzzword, is that I think businesses are finally waking up to customer experience being the right way to do business, being leading to more profitability, better customer loyalty, and that sort of thing. So it seems like we're moving away from some of those horror stories.
Yeah, I hope so. There was a guy that I know years ago that made his whole living going around speaking on the death of a salesperson, like what was like the worst. So he built a whole book around all those horror stories of salespeople but you learn from that, you know. But hopefully, like you say, we're not exposed to as many of those horror stories as in the past. But, you know, I'm sure they're still out there. There's still bad operators out there. But I think COVID has made people realize, oh, you know, what's really important in life, number one, and being much more sensitive to customers. Plus, there's this huge push now for digital purchases. You know, everybody's doing everything, either a mobile app or online, from a safety standpoint, where they're not going to stores, they're not shopping as much, they're doing telehealth, they're doing, you know, everything that's digital. And so there's more and more people involved in the contact center as your first point of contact or only point of contact with the customer. And I hope that organizations are seeing that as an area that they need to make sure they're paying attention to.
Yeah, isn't it interesting? I think I'm trying to remember. Have you had Justin Robbins on your show in the past?
Oh, not yet. No, huh?
Okay. But I've heard him say, especially during COVID, that a whole bunch of companies that didn't consider themselves contact centers have all of a sudden become contact centers amid the pandemic. And I mean, that applies to the companies you mentioned. It also applies to the Thai food restaurant down the street from me.
Yeah.
That all of a sudden is just
exactly
huge influx of phone orders.
Yep. And what they need to do also is, I this happened to me personally, is had experience where I was going to call in, order food from a restaurant, and their message, auto message said, oh, well, you know, you can go online and order this too. So I thought, oh, are you secretly telling me or hinting that you'd prefer I go online and order this food? Which is what I did. And when I went to pick up the food, I was going to use this coupon, and one of the reasons I ordered from there is because I had a coupon. They said, oh, well, you ordered through a third party, so it's already been paid for. We can't honor this coupon. So they need look at the whole supply chain, too, of, you know, if you're adding some of these third party companies to help you either fulfill orders, deliver orders, or take orders, you need to look at that whole supply chain, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, it's been interesting. I think the, and I can only empathize with them because I know this is such a challenge, but, and this kind of goes back to quality, is thinking about, you know, setting accurate expectations with customers. I mean, that's, I think as a manager, a customer service manager, I think that's the crux of every escalated customer I think I've ever dealt with, was that they expected one thing and we didn't meet or exceed that expectation. And I'm finding that
there was a disconnect.
You know, they'll tell me my food will be ready in 30 minutes and it's been 60 and I'm still waiting. So
yeah.
So many lessons
that's
we
true.
Can learn in the contact center.
Well, the one thing that, that we do, so as you know, we build simulations that are really, they're very realistic to the environment that the agent's in. And one of the things we started doing last year was, just, you know, other than just giving them exposure to that hands-on experience, you know, I started to ask the client, I said, well, can we have your scorecard? You know, can we reverse engineer your scorecard into the simulator experience so that the agent's being measured exactly the same way when they're being onboarded as they would be on a live call? Because I think there was a disconnect at a lot of call centers where you go through, you know, some form of classroom training, maybe sitting there watching someone on call and listening in, or vice versa. But then, you know, they didn't really tie all of that to here's how you're going to be held accountable. And I don't know if you've seen other companies that have done a good job of helping the agent understand the metrics that they're being held accountable for before they get on the phone.
Yeah, I know. Really working at the BPO, you know, my job was to work with our clients to, if, you know, we had a lot of clients come in that were, maybe they were like, you know, San Francisco or New York startups where it just doesn't make sense to build your contact center there. Those folks in the startup mode, you're sometimes dealing with a marketing director who is like, I guess I'm going to also manage customer service, but this really isn't my forte. So part of my job was to help them establish some of those quality best practices. So we'd try and work kind of on a consultative basis to help some of these clients stand up a customer service operation. And it was really an epiphany for me, and it took me a while. I worked really closely with our training manager, and I think somewhere along the line we were talking about just how important it is for us to have the quality scorecard ready to go and then share that with the training team as their onboarding agent, so they can even – because, you know, they're spending time in the training classroom, you know, either simulating calls or practicing writing emails or whatever customer service channels that the client is handling. It makes absolute sense for them to be stepping through that quality scorecard together and making sure they're hitting all those elements. So, it took me a while to make that connection. It sounds like you're doing a good job of making those connections already.
Well, you know, and it's one of my biggest frustrations in the 30 years I've been in corporate training and building training programs for clients is that the industry standards today that most people use, either through an evaluation form that's filled out at the end of a class or an online tool of some sort that just tracks if they completed the course and passed the test, I still didn't know if they actually had the skills to do the job. There was no scalable way, unless I sat there and watched them do something right? Or handle the call.
Absolutely.
And in COVID, now I can't really realistically do that. Even if I have four or five people reporting to me, it's just not realistic. And so our platform that we have is this built-in bot that is watching what you're doing and observing what you're doing and reporting on, you know, it took them three attempts to do X, Y, and Z, and their average handle time for this transaction was, you know, X. And so, to me, that's where I think there's a lot of tools out there. And the contact center has actually been the early adopters of bots and AI and speech analytics. You know, and for me, it's like, this is great. This is fantastic. Now I can actually, you know, look and measure to see if you actually have the right skill set, if you're what they call floor ready, and make a decision whether or not to even put you in production if you're really, you know, really bad. Hopefully not that bad, but if you're really bad, you know, not even going to the, you know, trouble of putting you into production, but, you know, so to me, that's like a revolution, and I am seeing some other tools come out in the marketplace like that. But it is interesting. I sat in on a CCW or ICMI type thing, and they surveyed the audience, and the majority of call centers today still do classroom training for the onboarding process. And then they said, well, how effective do you think it was? So about over 50% said they still do the instructor-led training. And then the effectiveness was about 15% said that they could see the connection between how they trained agents to the way that they handle the calls and the quality of their calls.
Wow.
So I'm just like, okay, well, if it's that low and that bad, what are you doing about it, you know? And I don't know if you've seen anybody that was, you know, in a situation, maybe in the BPO, or maybe you had a client in the BPO that – you know, their quality scores were really bad, and if there was a way that you kind of attacked that to turn it around.
Well, I think you are working on solving such a critical problem. I think just from looking at various customer support teams, that, you know, just let's just talk about the phone channel, and I think we have to remember that. If a human is doing the quality evaluating, that even if you have 5-minute calls, you know, they're spending 5 minutes listening to the call. Mm-hmm. If they're on a busy contact center floor, they're probably listening to the call more than once, at least one and a half times, to try and make sure they can accurately complete the quality form. And if it's a really long form, you know, 10 items might take them a couple minutes, but if it's in a high compliance, like a medical field or something like that, I could easily see it being a 20 or 30 question form. And that's 10 to 15 minutes to evaluate the call. And then, you know, we always required our supervisors or quality leads to coach in person. So that's another, 15, 20 minutes to go over the call with the agent.
Right.
So it's a lot of human hours to evaluate even a single call. And so they're probably doing, you know, anywhere from 4 to 8 a month. Maybe more if it's super, I've seen it more mostly like in financial services type organizations. But so, I mean, the prospect of being able to automate quality evaluation and evaluate 100% of calls instead of, you know, 1%, 2%. That's huge because
huge.
Then you can really take that. You can take that quality score and you can use that as your barometer to see if, I was talking to my same training manager friend who's now at a different company, and she was talking about how they do use their quality scores to know when an agent is ready to be trained on the next set of skills or move to the next level.
Oh, good.
But it's hard to use the scores if it's only, you know, 4 spot calls
checking
a month.
Yeah.
It's not quite their body of work.
I think
to your point too is, you know, I worked at a company where I was managing the product marketing for their speech analytics, and speech analytics, I think, gets you part of the way there, especially if you know how to use the tool well. But getting the technology to really use your scorecard, I think, is really powerful. So we wanted to do that at the BPO I was at, but couldn't quite get there because we had a lot of small programs. So I'm curious to hear more about how that progresses for you. And
we just launched it. Exactly. Yeah, we just launched it. It's called QEval Pro, and it does take a little while to calibrate, you know, the data that we get to the scorecard to increase the accuracy of what's being said and how we're parsing that out to each of the different buckets that's being measured. But yeah, once you get that thing going and it's calibrated to those different types of calls, it's just so eye-opening for an organization to see the patterns, the historical patterns of not only the individual but to others against each other within the same group or department. And one person even asked, they said, well, you know, what if we see a spike for some reason in calls? Like there's, I think the example I saw, it was actually on somebody else's website for a similar tool where there was a power outage and they saw a bunch of spikes in calls coming in of their internet's out, you know, and they're like, well, where are all these calls coming from? Can you narrow it down to like the zip code or something like that? But, you know, even if you just had a tool that could pull out what's being said on the call, you know, maybe it's a certain product that got shipped out and it's coming, you know, to the customer, you know, not assembled, or the expectation was it would be assembled, whatever that is, you can get in front of it, you know, and that's the whole thing that I think call centers in this day and age, you know, if you can get in front of a problem and proactively, you know, because you know, traditional training, when you put somebody on the phone, you become reactive, you know, and if you have tools like our simulator, before you put them in production, that's one stage gate where you can protect that situation from happening, and you can catch it proactively before they're in production. Then when they get in production, because you're doing this on every call, and depending upon how you get it set up, if you're getting the reporting in almost real time, again, you can get in front of the problem and be proactive versus reactive. And so I think that's really important for, you know, contact centers, because sometimes, especially a BPO, let's say you're handling a call for like a Comcast and it was an install and you scheduled the install, but you did it wrong. You know, you may not know you did it wrong until the person, the contractor's out there 3 days later doing the install and it's the wrong address or whatever it is. You know.
Yeah. Well, and that's precisely the moment when if you have supervisors doing quality, when the calls are ringing off the hook, that's precisely the moment when most contact centers tell their supervisors to stop doing quality and either do floor support or, I mean, sometimes they're jumping onto production as well. So you're potentially losing quality when you need it the most. And the ability to have technology come alongside is just huge.
That's an interesting point. Well, the other thing that this tool does is it basically creates a framework for how to coach this individual. But the other thing it adds, which I think is amazing, is it lets the agent report like a 360 of how well they thought they were coached. And so I just had a conversation this morning with a client. They said, before using this, this one person, the manager, was marking everybody's calls 100% on their evaluation. And they're like, that's kind of a red flag. Why would they all be perfect calls? And they started to listen in on the calls they were supposed to be evaluating, and, of course, they weren't 100% or even close to 100%. And so I'm thinking, okay, well, this would be another kind of, you know, way to police that situation when, you know, maybe the reps, the agent says, I didn't have a conversation with my manager, let alone have them score me 100%.
Wow.
So it's another kind of checks and balances on the infrastructure of, you know, from the call to the agent to the manager to the feedback to the quality of the feedback, you know, but it's, you know, I mean, nobody's perfect and everybody's going to never have a perfect contact center. But, you know, because, you know, technology's just gotten better. Because I remember just even 5 years ago, like transcription software. Oh,
oh yeah,
horrible. You couldn't understand anything.
Oh, yeah,
that was
for sure.
Printed out.
It's funny. I'm reminded of another not funny story, but sort of mm-hmm. horror story from a quality standpoint. Where, you know, when you're talking about checks and balances, we had a case where our quality teams were only listening to calls that were the average length, so you know, 5 or 6 minutes, and those mm-hmm. were the only ones they were picking. And you know, I always like to advocate, at least, especially with newer agents, listen to some of those really long calls, and
yeah,
just, you know, half of it's going to be hold time. But one thing we found was there was an agent that had tons and tons of calls that were like a minute or less, and realized that the agent was answering the phone, immediately muting their microphone so the customer couldn't hear them. So the people in the contact center thought they were talking to the customer, but the customer couldn't hear anything, so the customer would eventually hang up. And
Oh my gosh.
That agent got away with that for who knows how long before somebody wised up. And
wow.
So there's just so many things under the sun that you wouldn't imagine that people would do to avoid work. Or just some really bad
sure.
behaviors that
sure.
that I, if you can review
yeah,
all calls,
crazy.
it catches some of those things.
Now I'm curious what your thoughts are. I saw an article, I don't know if it's Teletech or somebody, a large BPO, was going to be putting video monitoring on agents because they're all still remote. And, you know, kind of the red flag there was waved around privacy concerns and things like that. So I don't know if you feel that video monitoring, pro or con from a, you know, quality control standpoint.
Oh yeah, that's really. I think I saw. I used to be a 5'9" customer way back in the day, and
mm-hmm.
they worked
mm-hmm.
with a quality company. I think they actually acquired this company. I think it's CSI Virtual Observer or something like that. One of the things they advertised was the ability to have a webcam on to see your agents, and you
mm-hmm.
know. That's not an environment I've really worked in, to be honest. I prefer to work, you know, I've worked in a lot of smaller companies where it was a high degree of family atmosphere. And the thought of being in an environment where you can't trust your employees to do a good job is
yeah.
just
yeah.
interesting. But I, you know, honestly, I would, it's hard for contact center folks when they can't see the people on the phone on the contact center floor to trust that they're actually working. But
yeah.
I think we should spend more of our time and energy trying to make these jobs as engaging as possible and
mm-hmm.
equip these people to do a good job. I mean, that's where I tend to focus. I know, but I think, you know, quality, robust quality process can make sure that you're holding people accountable to getting their work
yeah,
done, and
that's
kind
true.
Of balancing that with good productivity metrics as well. I think those two have to go hand in hand and kind of have to be in good balance with each other.
Yeah, I agree.
And if you
agree.
Do that well, I don't think you have to put a camera on somebody. they can have just a little bit of freedom as long as they're hitting their metrics and doing it with a good amount of quality and proficiency.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. Plus, you know, a lot of these folks may have a child step into the room to ask a question because they may still be homeschooled, you know, and do you want, you know, minors being on the camera and what, you know, where does that footage
oh,
go
yeah.
and what happens to it and whatnot.
Yeah,
so,
I don't even know about the
yeah.
privacy concerns.
Yeah, no, it's. I think they started to rethink that, but because they were the press that they were getting around it. But so for our final question out there, you know, what would you say an organization could do, or maybe some steps they could take to make sure that they really are measuring the right types of things on the calls and how to reassess that.
Well, I talked about getting back to the basics, but I would.
Mm-hmm.
I often point to, I have a good friend, Jeff Toyster. I know he's been on your show.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
he and I live about a mile from each other, I think. And
he has a great book. I think it's called the Service Culture Handbook, and it's all about creating your customer service vision. And I would always start there and continue to point back to that and build your quality process around that. Even you mentioned calibration earlier, Nancy, and I can't stress enough the importance of calibrating and making sure that the process is constantly hitting hitting that goal. And don't be afraid to change your quality process. It doesn't have to be cemented into stone. Like if it's if you're not achieving the experience that you want, do it differently. That's the nature of quality, is continuous improvement, right? So
exactly. Yeah. Well, awesome. Well, I think that's great advice for closing all here. And our audience, they love it.
Good affirmation.
Woo, they're whistling at you. Okay. All right, calm down. All right. Well, thanks for being on our show today, Jeremy. I really appreciate it. And we'll be, you know, watching you and all your successes in the future.
Thank you, Nancy. It was definitely my pleasure.
All right. Thanks a lot.